I've launched campaigns and picked keywords. I've got my bid, set placements too. Now bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my share of broken keywords, but I've gone through. We are the BBC, then, my friend.
Yeah, Michael, thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming out to Austin.
Dude, this is awesome.
What is it like seeing someone, because we've collaborated before, we've made some content,
yeah,
talked online quite a bit. I have a very small list of people who I have in my Slack channel.
Yeah.
You're one of them.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I feel pretty special.
How's it feel to finally meet in person? Pretty underwhelming.
So I got to tell you guys, this guy is way taller than I expected.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got flip-flops on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rocking the Birkenstocks.
Berks, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a glimpse into my private life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel like that tells me way more about you than any podcast we've ever done, right?
Yeah, for sure.
He's like a chill guy, a laid-back guy.
But also intense. So we're flying into this podcast fairly unplanned.
Yeah.
Which is very uncommon.
Yes.
I'm a bit of a planner.
Yeah.
One time I went kayaking and camping with friends and I drew up a map because we wouldn't have service.
Oh my God.
So I brought a map and labeled it.
All right. I got to tell you guys then how this podcast started. So I literally messaged Michael in Slack and I was like, yo, bro, I'm going to be in Austin in 2 days. Let's do a podcast. And you very graciously were like, yeah, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And then like the day before, I was like, hey, we're doing it here. And then literally the day we were like, let's talk about this.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. Complete polar opposite.
Thanks for getting this room.
Yeah, this is super cool. I don't know if you guys can tell, but we're on a stage in front of millions of people. We'll mm-hmm. green screen them in later.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is awesome. But yeah, thanks for, I mean, dude, Michael's got this great, you've had this great podcast for what, like, you've been doing it for like 2 or 3 years, right? 250 plus episodes?
Since 2017.
Holy smokes. Yeah. 6 years.
Yeah.
That is a lot mm-hmm. of podcasting. Yeah. What's been, I think, the most interesting part of kind of doing the whole podcasting thing and sharing value to people every day?
The connections, for sure.
Yeah.
Like being able to talk to people that I find interesting and have cool things to share. That's been really fascinating. I also think genuinely helping people is really rewarding. Mm-hmm. I think if I had an archetype, it would be like the teacher. I really enjoy like teaching people things.
Mm-hmm.
So like taking complicated things, breaking it down really easy. I really do enjoy that. So like this gives me that vessel all the time. I used to be a teacher.
Ah, yeah. What did you teach?
High school biology.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Give me a little dose of biology. It's been so long for me.
I think one of the coolest things to talk about is photosynthesis.
Okay.
Yeah, you know about it?
Is that like the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell kind of thing?
Well, just, you know, plants making their own food. It's pretty, from the sun, pretty wild, right?
Yeah.
Just rains down sun and plants can grow an avocado.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is wild. Yeah, all right. So maybe we start a new podcast.
What was did you do anything in a former life?
Yeah, so former life, I was an equity options trader. So I did that.
Wow.
I graduated right before the credit crisis.
Is that like Robin Hood?
Yeah. I was, I don't know if you saw, but on Netflix, they got the show now on GameStop. So
Did you see it?
About the whole, I started watching it last night.
Oh, I thought it was a movie.
No, it's got episodes. So it might be like a long form, but it's got episodes. Started watching it last night. Good show. Really fun story. Like, I was following along as it was happening. Sort of the whole GameStop saga, the short, you know, Ryan Cohen being like, I love GameStop. All these Redditors making millions of dollars out of their mom's basements. Like, it was awesome.
Do you think in the future there'll be a profession, meme stock options trader? Who just specializes in meme stocks?
I would be shocked if there wasn't already. So, like, back when I was on the other side of the table at a trading firm, if we saw activity like that, for sure, somebody would get assigned to it. And they would become, like, a meme stock expert. Wow. Guarantee you there's guys on those desks that are now just, like, trolling Reddit, like, paying attention to all the squeezes.
Do you think there's any people planting honeypots on Reddit to trip people into thinking something should be shorted? Or
yeah.
Because nobody's discerning anything.
No, I mean, it's Reddit. It's anonymous, right? You just say whatever the...
You just do whatever has the most upvotes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure, for sure. But like, that was kind of like, I don't know if you guys remember like penny stocks, like pre-internet, right? Mm-hmm. Like you would get, that's the whole boiler room principle, right? They would call you, they would pitch penny stocks that they own and get doctors or whoever they can get on the phone to buy, you know, millions of these to drive the stocks up. So it's this been around, you know, since, you know, you could trade stocks. Finance.
It's baked into people's DNA to want to find an easy way to get rich quick.
Oh, it's crazy. So I follow a lot of people on LinkedIn that I think have interesting stories. But the ones that I think do most successful on social are people selling other people on how to get rich. Nothing sells like selling somebody hope.
Number one thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like you follow like, who's that guy? Justin something on LinkedIn. And his whole LinkedIn is about how to sell your shit on LinkedIn and get rich.
Yeah.
And he's definitely rich, man. His course is like, because I bought his course because I wanted to like expand the eSpark name on LinkedIn. I was like, yeah, maybe this guy will tell me how to do things better. Mm-hmm. And it's a good course, like no bagging on it. Yeah. I use a lot of, you know, techniques from it to get, you know, to make my post more interesting to read. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, that's the guy that's making all the money.
For sure.
It's wild.
It's it's a classic easiest way to get rich is to tell other people how to get rich. And just charge for it. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work out, it's their fault.
Yeah. Oh,
for
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's tough stuff.
Yeah. Very low accountability there.
There's zero accountability. I've seen some people go as far to say, like, if you can't make money from my course, you're a loser. Like, stuff like that.
That would be like me going and be like, Nike, if you can't make money on Amazon working with us, that's
you're a
your
loser.
Fault.
You got yeah. your, I've seen it as far as like, if you wanted a refund for a course. So it's like, buy the course, there's a refund. But if you wanted the refund, you had to go into the Discord and say, I'm a loser, I didn't try hard enough in front of everybody. Then that was the only way to get your money back.
I love that, dude.
Yeah.
I might be changing careers after that.
Right. That's it. Should we launch it now?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
That's what we should launch it and podcast it. Like just meet every week and be like, this is us selling our get rich quick course. I guarantee people would buy it.
I'm in it. I'm on it. Should we teach people how to get rich on Amazon?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's
okay.
do it. So that is something.
So step number one, start a KDP business. Book title, How to Get Rich on KDP. Here's my AI, Fiverr, Canva feedback loop to sell coloring books.
Yep.
Generated by AI.
Yep.
Sent.
All linked together by Zaps.
I don't even look at the diagrams. I don't even look at what people are coloring. It's all powered by Zaps. I have three free plans. I stitch it together. Yep. Three free Zapier free plans.
Yeah,
can't pay for Zapier.
The $0 way to $1 million. I love this. Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, selling on Amazon way harder than this. There are no Zaps to save you. Although you can implement some Zaps with Amazon, I think.
What's the last Zap you made?
Oh goodness. This is probably less relevant, but I'm on the sales. I've been focusing a lot on the sales side now. So we made a Zap for cleaning leads. Mm-hmm. So like, who's somebody like, I don't know if I should dox people, but let's say I want to reach out to some guy named Peter who works at, you know, a surfboard agency. Mm-hmm. And I see their Amazon. I'm like, these guys suck at Amazon, but they have a great product, which is our number one niche. Like, I love seeing that because I know I can make you a lot of money. We're going to have a great time working together. So, I mean, basically, I'm trying to find these Peters and get in front of them. Say, hey, Peter, this is not going well. Mm-hmm. you know, do you care? Do you want to make it help?
I'm sorry. Do you say Peters? There's multiple Peters working at this company.
I get in front of all the Peters in this company.
And you're only interested in the Peters.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. No Johns or Marks. Okay.
Okay. All right. So
that's what the Zap's for.
So you found
filter out all the non-Peters at the company.
So you found all the Peters at the company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it. And then what?
Well, then it just cleans them up, puts all their information into our CRM. And then, you know, we'll target them with ads, cold email, whatever.
What's your CRM of choice?
Honestly, so we're still using, and this is probably going to be crushed by anybody, but like Google Sheets. Mm. My issue with CRMs, like you could get into HubSpot, et cetera, but I think that, and this is something that I'd be curious about your opinion on, is with software, you can sometimes get like feature creep, I think is it's called, where it's like, there's just too many features. It's too complicated. I just need to know this dude's name, email, a little bit about him, and let me run from there. Does that make sense?
Why do you think people would dunk on you for using Google Sheets?
Oh, I just feel like it's not, you know, it's not the cool thing is automation, right? Like everything should be automated. You should be using the
best. Well, I think in some ways you're bucking the trend.
That's, I'm a contrarian.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's that's what you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all about how you frame it.
Yeah. The best would be if you used Microsoft Excel as your CRM and you had to send each
download
other files. Yeah. Hey, when's the last time you updated the CRM? It's like,
shit.
I hit save as and now I have two CRMs.
No, no, no. What you do is it's the save as version 1.1, 1.2, 1.2.
Yeah.
I laugh because I've been there. Like when I first started going back to my first life, when I first started on the trading floor, I mean, Excel was pretty cutting edge back then. Maybe not super cutting edge, but everybody used it. And so you would have like all your trading tools built in Excel and you would have like tabs on tabs.
1973.
How old? Not that old.
How old are you?
39. So this was, I started in 2007.
Yeah.
So not too crazy, but you know, Excel was hot. Yeah. Bloomberg was still relatively new.
Yeah.
Oh, so it wasn't too crazy. But yeah, let's talk. Well, I guess there's no rush to get to it, but I did want to share cool strategy for Amazon.
Let's do it.
And I'm super curious what you think. So here's something that we've been doing recently, and this was brought up to me by one of my brand managers. Awesome strat. So Amazon launches brand tailored promotions, right? They do this like, what, maybe a month ago? It's still really new. Essentially, you have a whole list of audiences that you can target with a coupon code on Amazon. And Amazon puts it in front of them. And then, you know, you can target a you can target cart abandoners, which is awesome. You can target people who are likely to buy based on Amazon's algo, people that have visited your listing. Essentially, it's like 8 or 10 different audiences.
Repeat customers, recent customers, high spend customers, potential new customers, customers who have clicked on your brand, added to cart recently, but have not purchased in the last 12 months.
Those are some awesome audiences.
Yeah. It's cool that they just give them to you as opposed to like a Facebook ads or Google ads where you can create stuff like this, but then you have to like determine what it is and like figure out who the buckets are. They sort of present the buckets to you on a silver platter here, which is really nice.
It's super nice. Mm-hmm. And add to carts is something that we've been as sellers wanting for ever, the cart abandoners. Because you can do that on, you know, Shopify or D2C site.
Yeah.
That's a, it's a great way to recover lost revenue.
This is a no-brainer.
Yeah. So I would, like, first off, go check out Brand Tailored Promotions. It's under the advertising drop-down.
Look at this one. High spend customers, the highest spending 5% of your brand for the last 12 months.
Here's a question, though. So high spend customers, high spending, right? They're already buying. Do you discount them? Because here's the thing with Brand Tailored Promotions. It's not like an email goes out. It simply means that when that person comes back to your listing, they're presented with a discount. And they're not even told why. So it's just like they show up on your listing. Oh, it's 10% off today. But it's like, is that for a high spender? Is that something that they were already doing and you're just giving away money?
Can you define brand tailored promotions? Like where do these appear? What are they?
Yeah.
Give us the definition.
Great question. Let's take a step back. Yeah. So brand tailored promotions are essentially coupons that show up on the listing, only on the listing, not on the search results page. Only on the listing, and they only show up for the audience that you've selected.
So they need to get there still in order to see it. But once they're there, then they see it.
Exactly. Yes. And that's where, and I don't, there's so much more to talk about brand tailored promotion, but I want to jump in with views remarketing. So what's pretty cool is that we are trying to link the two together and say, okay, let's use views remarketing and the visited my listing before audience there drive people that have viewed my listing but didn't buy back to my listing and show them a coupon. So we're trying to combo the two. So we're turning those brand tiller promotions on and then running views remarketing campaigns. And the, you know, you don't have data to say like, oh, that person did buy, right? Because brand tiller promotions just tells you, yeah, you made 20, I don't know, 50, you know, 1,000 extra in sales, but the logic makes sense.
Yes. It's really cool. Yeah. It's always nice to be able to stitch those kinds of things together. And also with sponsored display, like you could write some text there as well. I'm curious if you thought about, should you write some text there? I wonder what the, let's look at these guidelines. Cause I feel like one thing that's super effective is like reminding, like some kind of promotion, like this would be like a Facebook or a Google ad strategy of like, you're acknowledging that they've seen it before, where like you say, like returning visitors get X, you know, returning visitors get promotion or like coupon for returning visits. I don't think they have any. I'm looking at it. They have some guidelines. Check for typos. Can't use all capitals. Don't use incomplete sentences. Don't add price or other pricing messages. Maybe that would fail. But like, I wonder if there's some kind of text that you could use to
kind of
give them a wink.
Yeah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
Or you could do it in your video too.
Mm-hmm.
For sponsored display, you can do video now.
Yeah.
So you could even do a video and say, like you said, kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, hey, welcome back to, I don't know, you know, Ad Badger's Garlic Press. There's something special inside for you.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, like something kind of.
Yeah, even as simple as potentially welcome back. Pretty interesting. Like little other high click-through rate hacks. It's cool.
Yeah.
Do you like, here's a question for you. Sponsored display. What percentage of a budget should go towards sponsored display? If you had 100 advertising dollars, how much are you putting in the sponsored display bucket?
I'm probably going 33. So I like sponsored display a lot. And part of the reason I would say the primary is placements and then the audiences. So placements, like I like sponsored display, especially when I'm going after competitors and I want to be all over their listing. I pepper them with sponsored display, especially if they're weaker than us. And I have a strategy for that. Remind me to tell you about it. But that's one reason why I like it. I love going after competitors and owning market share on Amazon. Every sale I think you can get that you deny somebody else is just even more powerful for your organic rank, right? Not only did you get a sale, which, you know, the Amazon algorithm says, okay, let's rank them up, but you also denied your competitor a sale. So to me, it's like huge win.
Yeah, it's worth more than the actual ACoS.
Exactly.
That's why I like competitor terms, like, yeah, they're annoying and they're going to be expensive, but like you just like subtracted market share from somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you have a consumable product, right, or a repeat buy, what your LTV? Let's look at your LTV. If you get five purchases out of that customer, I guarantee you, you know, a two ROAS doesn't look that bad when you get five purchases. You know what I mean? So it's like, and Amazon announced at Amazon Accelerate that they're going to start rolling out LTV data, which would be even cooler. So if you are a consumable product, you'll be able to see this data in real time.
That's huge.
That's going to be really exciting. So your initial question was, hey, how much? 33. And I was saying, hey, I like it for the sponsored display to go after other brands. And so that's honestly a big chunk of what I'm using sponsored display for in the contextual.
So we got 1,200 marketplaces on the AdBadger software. Do you want to know the average percentage that people are spending on sponsored display?
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Okay. Are we doing like Price is Right or closest to?
I know the answer. Okay. We're doing Survivor. If you don't get this right, the podcast ends.
We just screen fades to black.
Yeah, that's it.
I would say 8%.
Four. So it's a really...
Guys, call me.
It's a really tiny amount.
You're leaving money on the table.
It's a really tiny amount.
Yeah.
I think people are really... So first of all, a lot of people don't ever make it to even sponsored brands. Like in the hierarchy of campaigns to launch, everyone has sponsored prods.
Yeah.
Some people have sponsored Bs. Almost nobody has sponsored Ds.
That is money on the table. That is crazy. And what's crazy too is that... Oh man, that floors me. Sorry. But it's crazy too, because your competitors, or at least your savvy ones, are coming after you.
Yeah.
they're using those placements if you aren't. Like, Amazon is so pay to play now. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is it like, depending on the category, sometimes 100% of above the fold is ads.
Oh yeah.
So it's not leveraged sponsored display. Oh, yeah. You're missing out.
So it's available for you. It's like, there's still, so I think the point there is like, there's still some early mover advantage with sponsored display.
That's a good point. That's good to know.
And I feel like it's something that a lot of companies on Amazon struggle with, which is like, I'm doing PPC. I'm like good at numbers. Give me numbers, 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 numbers. I have to think of a video. I have to think of like a headline. I have to think of like audience targeting. It's like, it really clashes with the PPC brain. So I think like, that's where I think a lot of digital marketing is going, where it's like creative based. So like thinking more like, hey, like if you have good sponsored products and your sponsored products are like 30% ACoS, there's no reason why you can't increase your revenue. If you just have sponsored products, introduce sponsored brands and instantly get like 30% more revenue at the exact same ACoS. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, but it's, they're like, people are sometimes afraid of building store pages, building mm-hmm. videos, like doing that and doing it well has a real ROI on it.
Writing copy.
Yeah.
Because like you said, you can add headlines into some of these now.
Yeah. So yeah. And I think like for the numbers-based PPCer, you can, I've been hacking my creativity. I've just been like asking, I use Bard.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, leverage it.
I asked Bard to give me a bunch of ideas.
Yeah.
You think what do you think about Bard versus ChatGPT?
Oh man. Okay.
What are you using on a regular basis? Because we actually had an episode where we were like, here's how all these ways to use ChatGPT for Amazon sellers.
Yeah, go back and watch that episode. That was like right when GPT first came out, and we were like, well, this is gonna change the marketing game.
Yeah. Has it?
I'm a GPT-4 power user. Yeah. It saves me so much time.
Yeah. Do you feel like ChatGPT got dumb over the last few months?
Okay, so I actually feel like it did. There was like a dip where it got really, really dumb, but I think it's on a comeback.
So MIT, MIT, Stanford, one of those schools, released a study where like they were just prompting it with mathematics questions for, I don't know exactly the structure. I only read the headlines, but it said like they were...
like everybody else on the internet.
they were giving it math problems and they did notice a dip. And I made it far enough into that article to click on it that there was a graph that showed like performance score just completely dip. Yeah. And then I feel like I see things on the internet that people have written with ChatGPT and it gives me ick.
Yep, gives the ick.
Because I feel like it's so obvious, like ChatGPT doesn't read like a human anymore, but I feel like Bard is a little bit more natural.
And dude, I'm going to go, literally after this, I'm going to go try Bard. Because you know, like I get lots of comments on my LinkedIn posts and you read some and you're just like, it's that uncanny valley where you're like, just something's a little off on this.
This is too much. It's too friendly.
Yeah.
Nobody writes a sentence like that.
Yeah.
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 It's like sounds like someone who learned English and then hadn't spoken it for a long time.
Yeah. And uses strange vocabulary sometimes too.
Weird punctuation.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it's in the uncanny valley.
I'm over it. I'm all about Bard now. Give me something else.
I'm switching to Bard then, dude. I love it. Like, I just think AI, okay, so speaking of AI, I've read this really awesome article by this professor that did this study on, at BCG, using AI, ChatGPT specifically.
What is BCG?
Boston Consulting Group.
Got it.
So they went to this major consulting group, big major organization, said, hey, let's have some of your consultants use GPT and some not. And then of these consultants that use GPT, make sure we have a good mix of top performers and low performers. And what they found was is that GPT boosted everybody.
Oh, I saw this.
Everybody did better. Top performers did a little bit better, like 10% better. Bottom performers did like 50% better. Mm-hmm. So everybody gets a boost, low performers up here, top performers up here.
Yeah. I saw that.
So it's like, and I mean, I see that even, and so I'm like, well, I want to leverage this as much as I can. And I even see that in my own work. Like sometimes I just get stumped on an email and I'll just be like, finish this email for me.
Yeah.
And then I don't like copy paste it. Like I still trim it, but it's like, oh, you kind of got me past my brain.
For sure.
Fart or stuck or whatever.
It's only a matter of time before it's in like every text prompt everywhere.
Oh, yeah. 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 Every software I use now, like ClickUp is like, pay us, I don't know, an extra $1,000 a month insane. And you can ask the AI. And I'm like, or I could just alt tab. Like, come on, ClickUp.
Do you know how much I saw a thing BCG said alt tabbing costs eSpark specifically $3,000 a day. Just alt tabbing. No, I'm kidding.
I thought it was a real study. Yeah,
just like alt tabbing.
But hey, rolling back, what were we talking about a second ago?
We're talking about the efficacy of sponsored display and...
Oh, you were talking about something interesting you brought up was creatives. And you said, look, there's PPC is sort of like data brain, right? Like you get all this data, you got to look at numbers, you got to fudge them and you got to make them work. But now you're saying, hey, it's kind of shifting more to creative because the Amazon's allowing you more creative freedom in what you do. Like images, video, headlines, et cetera. Even custom images now. And I was talking to a buddy of mine that does Facebook ads. And he said Facebook made the same kind of shift. He's like, pre-iOS change was all data. That's all you cared about. He's like, post-iOS change, it's all creative. Like, you have to you have to nail your creative.
Yes.
And I think the same thing is going to happen on Amazon. Like, you're going to have to nail your creative to get people to click.
For sure. Fun anecdote.
Yeah.
You know how your left brain... Your left side of your brain is more like analytical. Right side of your brain is a little bit more creative.
Yep.
And like the left side, this controls the left side of your body.
I did not know this, but this is.
I had a buddy who said that he was doing a lot of exercises. So like everyone's right hand dominant. So like because of that, it just continues to reinforce our like logical part of our brain. And the creative part withers. And he said he started to do exercises with his left hand to try to cultivate his right brain to get more creative.
Yeah.
And he's like, now I'm so inspired to write poetry.
No way.
I swear. It's a real story.
That's wild. Anecdote. I mean, I know like when you're lifting, right? Like you'll notice like, oh, it's way easier with my right arm than my left. And then, you know, like you try to correct that imbalance. That's interesting though.
Do you feel like, follow-up question on that, do you feel like lifting is an important part of Amazon?
Oh, it's huge.
You gotta be jacked up if you're gonna be smashing CTRs and CVRs.
Yeah. Like I want, if I hire like somebody to do my Amazon, I want them to be like,
you gotta do it.
Yeah. You gotta be jacked. Like what's your squat?
I asked that. Yeah, for sure. You also mentioned something interesting, before we hit record, which was using your email list. So this is an email list that hopefully you've been generating outside of Amazon. So I think the most successful people I know on Amazon very rarely are just on Amazon. It's like, why would you only be in one arena? So I feel like the biggest companies that we work with are always like Amazon's a part of their overall e-commerce experience. Because if you're absolutely crushing it on Amazon, it's possible that you have a product that people like enough that they will also buy off of Amazon as well. Or like it's worth building a community, or worth doing something around. So like you build up your email list. And you mentioned using that email list to send people to Amazon, which gives some people the ick. Because why would I already have the customer. Why wouldn't I send them to my Shopify store as opposed to sending them right to Amazon?
And I've had this conversation so many times and I get it, right? Initially you're like, I spent a lot of money acquiring that customer. I get my best margins on Shopify. Why would I want to Amazon? Well, first off, you're not surprising anybody by telling them Amazon's there. Everybody, you know, you can't force your consumers to behave how you want. But that aside, I'm not even saying send your whole email list to Amazon. So what we do is when you launch a new product, and you guys, I'm sure, see this, and I'd love to see more data on this, but if I was just go out and spend, you know, 10 grand on ads in the first month of launching a new product, and then when it has no reviews, or maybe five or something like that, and then I spend 10 grand 6 months later when it has 100 plus reviews, and I do the exact same thing, this performance is going to be way better.
Of course.
Right? You know, CTRs are higher, CVRs are higher, all that good stuff. Click-through rates and conversion rates are higher. So what we say is that, look, when you create a listing, you're really making an investment in a long-term set of cash flow from this product throughout its life cycle. And if I can accelerate the return on that investment by generating reviews faster, and I can take a small subset of my email list. I'm talking like couple hundred people. Mm-hmm. Does not have to be a big subset. And send them to Amazon one time.
Yeah.
And I can juice my reviews through the roof.
Yeah.
The ROI is incredible.
Big time. And if you use good analytics like maybe a Klaviyo, you'll know who's left you reviews in the past on your Shopify store, who are going to be more likely to leave reviews on your Amazon listing. Yeah. Money in the bank.
Yeah. I mean, you can literally, like Michael's saying, you can segment your list down. Let's say you've had 500 people leave you a review on your website, right? Like they like you, they like your product. I mean, they went out of their way to leave a review on your website. You just get like 100 of them and just say, hey, look, I'm going to give you, we're launching this new product on Amazon. Just go buy it over there. Here's 30% off. You know, we love you. You buy from us all the time.
Yeah.
People are loyal to brands. You know what I mean? So I'm not worried about them running away from me, the brand.
Yeah. That's a no brainer.
Yeah. So, and then it's like they pop over there and then you send them a couple follow-ups like, hey, hope you love that juicy discount code we gave you. Just drop a review on Amazon here. Boom. Link.
You know, what else is interesting. One of my friends has a Shopify store. He decided to remove the add to carts and only sends people to Amazon.
Ah. Well, is he using Buy with Prime?
I don't know if he's doing it now because that's relatively recent.
Yeah.
But
He was. Yeah.
For sure. So he made the decision a while ago of just like, you know, he was selling a product. He was like a new company. He's like, let me, as the easiest way to like gain trust, like just buy it on Amazon. Just go buy this product on Amazon.
Yeah.
He crushes it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I think trying to force your customer into a certain buying behavior is just ineffective.
People like options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, you think about too, like the product discovery journey, it's incredible, right? Like they might see it on Instagram and then they check your website and they're like, oh, that's legit. And then they're buying their toilet paper and something, you know, they see your ad on Amazon. They're like, oh shit, yeah, I did want that. You know, that's like three touch points that mattered.
Yeah.
But you can't one attribute correctly, right? Even though people are trying now. But if you weren't on Amazon, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Right? They saw Instagram, they went to your D2C, and then they forgot you forever. So it's like, I see no reason, well, in many scenarios, I see no reason to at least not be on Amazon.
Yeah.
But let me give you an example. I do have one product that I saw that I worked on where I actually think I ended up saying, hey, I don't know that Amazon's right for this product. And it was a highly complex product that people were not searching for. So like,
classic is a Kickstarter type product.
Exactly. Like you didn't know to look for it. Amazon's not really like, there's people on their top of funnel, but there's not a lot of product discovery going on at Amazon. It's more like they know or they what they want. And that product, man, it was just very expensive to acquire customers. And I was like, you know what? Maybe you acquire on your website or through Facebook or Instagram, which is more creative focused and top of funnel focused.
You know, it's a really pessimistic, like a downer of a question to ask, like, is Amazon a commodities marketplace? Where like, it's true. There's so much of it is like, if you don't have a product that has existing search volume, you're going to have a hard time on Amazon. So like the classic case is like a Kickstarter product, which is like they're inventing something brand new with a new angle on it. Doesn't exist anymore. Hasn't existed before. And it's like, people don't know to search it. That's an interesting case.
So like, yeah, those I say, it's going to be tough.
Funny enough, shout out to Rocketbook, was a early AdBadger customer.
No way, you had Rocketbook? I love Rocketbook. Rocketbook, my wife got me one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out Rocketbook. So like, that's a product that is generally not searched. So like the reason they had success on Amazon was because they did a bunch of other stuff too.
Oh yeah.
You know, they were on television. And like they had really good, I think they were on Shark Tank, but so they had really good outside branding, creating that demand. And the challenge for them still at the time was to like, well, there's still like these keywords that like didn't really exist before them. So like, how do we get some other traffic, which might not be so relevant, and bring them over? So like anytime you have to educate in marketing, it's always going to be difficult. So like, again, full customer journey, full funnel approach, give people options to buy. So yeah. And I mean, they absolutely crush it.
Oh yeah. Such a cool product. Really cool invention. I've got one. I've had people given to me as gifts.
Yeah.
Love those guys.
Did you bring me one today?
You should have brought me one. You're fine, no, man. I know, yeah. If I got a stack at home.
Fair enough.
Okay. Do you put them up on your refrigerator and have all your honey-do lists on them? That's actually a cool idea. Rocketbook, if you're listening, Why don't you make like a magnetic rocket book that I put on my fridge?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's called a whiteboard.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about, did you say honeydew, like as in like honey, do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of an old term, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm secretly from the time traveler from the.
Remember what I said about the, I found this new thing called a spreadsheet earlier?
Yeah. What's this Excel thing you keep talking about?
CRM is Google Sheets.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to release this show. I've never done a show like this.
Yeah.
We've covered, I think we attempted to give people an actionable item today, which is go and turn on your brand tailored promotions, play with them, combine them with views based remarketing on sponsored display.
Yep.
Talk to the people right now that just heard that and are like, seems like a lot of work.
Mm.
Like, good question. Can I just do some research in Helium 10 and add some keywords and call it a day to my sponsored products? Call it a day.
Actually,
that's like 95% of what people do. They're just like, let me go into Helium 10, find some more keywords and put them.
Throw them in there.
So I think if anyone considers anything beyond that, you're ahead of most people doing Amazon PPC.
Oh my goodness. Well, then this,
because like we live in a bubble of like, we know a lot of people who are really good at Amazon marketing, and like you live in this bubble. But like, if you're considering things like campaign structure and sponsored display remarketing strategies, combining it with brand tailored promotions, they're in the top 1%.
Well, let me tell you this: getting to the top 1% is way easier than it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this could be considered somewhat jargon heavy, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe just a sponsored products user, but brand tailored promotions is literally one, two, three clicks to turn on,
pressing some buttons.
Three clicks. That's it.
Well, you have to pick the number of like what you want the promotion to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's like advertising, brand tailored, audience, number, submit.
So it represents another thing too, of like just knowing something exists versus like actually doing it is also very hard.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people too, like if something new comes out in Amazon marketing, they will do it because it's new. But some will do it. Well, some will never do it. Some will do it because it's new and then like forget to do it again or forget something else because they're just like focused on the new thing. It's actually really hard for people to like learn something new, incorporate it, figure out how often you're going to check in on it, like integrate this with other things. That's the reason why companies like ours exist, to digest this info, break it down.
Yeah. I mean, people, you know, we're generally working with heads of e-commerce who are quite savvy marketers and digital leaders.
Mm-hmm.
These people know, they get it, right? But for them, it's more like, I don't have the time to stay at the cutting edge, and I also don't have the time to execute on all this work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why people end up hiring us. Quick pitch, come hire us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that brand tailored promotions is something that like you could have your secretary turn on. You know, I'm not saying a secretary. I mean,
secretary is another term for someone, because we're like, oh, spreadsheets are new.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, your secretary, your front desk lady.
Sorry.
Put it on the honeydew board.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry if I'm using dated terms, but I just mean somebody on your on your team that has no Amazon training could do this.
Yes.
So that's an easy no-brainer turn on.
Yeah.
And even the views remarketing is not, I mean, you know, maybe it's twice as many clicks, but picking it is not that hard, and you just get it turned on and just kind of watch it.
Mm-hmm.
See how it goes. Check in every 2 weeks, every week at the start.
Yeah.
Let it get some data, and you're bringing back revenue, which I think is, you're in the 1% now. You can start, you know, you're going to be sitting on your yacht doing these pretty soon.
I dig it. That is an actionable strategy people should be doing.
Before we run out of time, can I ask you about running Ad Badger?
What would you like to know?
Oh man, everything. So let's pretend that I've been watching a lot of like start your own SaaS company videos, right?
Do they have those?
Dude, Google or YouTube is full of them.
Start your own SaaS?
Oh my goodness. Like I'm actually, Frank, because I think SaaS is such a cool space.
Yeah.
I'm like on these newsletters that are like, I'm on this micro SaaS newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here's how to build a micro SaaS company.
Yeah.
Because it's.
Was that for ants?
Yeah. What is this? A school for ants? Yeah,
like a Microsoft.
Yeah. That's a Zoolander from the 80s. You know? Another dated quote. No, it's essentially just like super hyper niche.
Mm-hmm.
So like guys that wear Birkenstocks and do podcasts need a, here's this little software that solves it for them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like their, that newsletter. And I just think it's fascinating what people are building. So like, let's say I want to jump into it. Like, what's not cool about running a SaaS business? What are the hard parts that people don't talk about?
I think in the Amazon space specifically is feature creep. The idea that there are a huge amount of good ideas that belong in an Amazon PPC tool. There's countless amount, but you can't do everything. And you need a user experience that flows together. So you can't have random things. And you also, so picking what goes in is very tricky. And not being able to go at the pace of like Amazon marketing is tricky. So sometimes, sometimes it's like relatively simple. Like rest of search comes out, you know, you can modify rest of search bid placements now.
Yeah. By the way, you can do that. Very cool.
Yeah. And you know, we look at that and we're able to get that into our software relatively quick. Other things it's like, oh man, day parting is a thing. It's going to take us like 9 months to get it. We are in like the early stages of testing it now. So like it's taken us a very long time to do things. Whereas like me as the marketer knows the value of it. Like let's do it right now.
Yeah.
So it's like the trade-offs is the hard thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like you're making a, making, it's like you're cooking or baking a cake, but the cake is baking while you're putting your ingredients in.
Yeah.
So it's like, you want to add the right ingredients at the right time.
This is,
but your cake's being baked, so you like gotta.
Yeah, it's not a micro SaaS.
Yeah, no.
Maybe it could have been.
Maybe it's a baby.
We're just gonna do one thing in Amazon advertising, just that one thing. But no, so it's like I bet just more like a suite of stuff. So like every single thing needs to be maintained, and it's super fun and super challenging. It's like a labyrinth because like you have the Amazon marketing labyrinth bolted on software labyrinth, and it's really complex and exciting and keeps me really engaged and motivated. And like you learn so much. It's pretty cool. Yeah. It's pretty stressful.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Cool and stressful. I would say that's what building a business is. I was at this conference yesterday with a bunch of entrepreneurs and they were talking about, somebody asked like, how many times do you think your business is going to fail?
Yeah.
And
2023? You know, yeah. That, the answer is different in 2023 versus 2021.
Right. Yeah. COVID, everybody shopping online.
Yeah.
Amazon is the bee's knees.
Up only, dude.
Yeah. But you know, like, I mean, it's hard. Like everybody worries about it. Or at least I worry about it every day. I'm like, oh shit, we could be doing this better or that better. Or like, here's how to improve this.
Yeah. One of my core memories as a entrepreneur, I was at some meetup 10 years ago and this person was there who I thought was like hyper successful.
Yeah.
And, I said something like, oh man, like you ever worry about like, you know, stuff getting taken away or like having a down month or whatever, down year or whatever. Doesn't that make you nervous? And he's like, man, everyone gets nervous with that. You just keep going.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I think that's, I hold that to be fundamentally true.
Yeah.
In fact, it's a big turnoff for me when I meet someone who like doesn't have that part of their vision. Isn't paying attention to that.
Yeah.
Like sort of like the person who thinks like they're King Midas.
Yep.
And like everything will all like, there's like a bit of humanity that I think is really valuable, which is why like the get rich people really bother me.
Give you the ick.
Because it's like, it's not easy.
No.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know.
It's not easy. Like that person who's doing that is the most depressed person.
Yeah.
Like that person's the most anxious. Like if they have the need to like flaunt, they're looking for their own validation more than anything. That's like the most empty.
Oh yeah.
That's like the most empty.
Well, I was at this conference and this girl was talking about that. She's like, Cody Sanchez. And she's like, look, I talk to billionaires all the time. And she's like, some of these are miserable motherfuckers. Yeah. Like she's like, they are just miserable.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know what? Like you have to find that balance of where do you get joy and build? And I think that's kind of like what you and I are talking about is like, we get a lot of joy from building these businesses and helping others. Like that's, you know, our love language.
Mm.
And can we do that? And also to build a successful business that generates, puts food on the table.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
Yeah.
I think the biggest flex anyone can do is like find success and still be a normal person.
Yeah.
That's the biggest flex. It's like I was able to be successful and like I didn't need to, you know, get a Ferrari because I felt like I had to.
Yeah.
Or like I didn't have to like cut out my friends and family because they were like not on the fast track with me.
Yeah.
Or like
your kids weren't willing to grind with you.
Sorry, kid. Stuff like that.
You got to put in some hours if you want time with dad.
That's the biggest flex. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Although to be honest, like if I could afford a Lambo, I'd buy one for sure. But I don't know if I'd buy one and post about.
Well, I mean, you could get one now. It's like any, you don't have to be incredibly wealthy to like rent a car for like $1,500 a month. It's like, that's like, you know what it is? It's like you're impressing poor people.
Yes.
Because like, you know, like most super wealthy people like don't need to flaunt it. So like when people do stuff like that in like the entrepreneurial space, they're like trying to impress people who like don't know that like you can rent a Ferrari for $700 a day, or like it only costs like a few grand to rent it for months at a time.
Yeah.
Month by month. So it's like not actually that cool. So I always wonder that. Yeah. So it's like, could I like do the, how important is it? I actually love to flex. I drive a Honda Civic.
I saw it. He's not lying. Pulled up in it. And I was like, that is the world's most normal car.
Yeah, yeah. That's the move. That's the move. These are my values. I think people know this if they've made it this far.
Yeah. Birkenstocks, Honda Civic. These are two buys. I can't. So cool story.
And Bard, it's free.
And Bard, it's free.
Yeah.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You're a value-based guy. You like to get a lot for.
Big time.
Because Birkenstocks live forever. Honda Civics live forever.
Oh, yeah.
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 I love that. You would do well in the Woo-Ra or the eSpark household.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My wife is very about getting her money's worth.
Oh, yeah.
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 That's good stuff.
We got 2 minutes left.
I think I was checking. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes.
Well, less than 2 minutes.
Wow.
We've never done a podcast like this. I hope everyone out there in Ad Badger land enjoyed this style. I think I'm just going to call this like the most unhinged episode we've ever done. Just jumping around different topics.
Topics all over the place. Yeah.
It's good. There's a part of me that wants a conversational based podcast.
I love it.
There's a part of me that just, you know, just talks about if one person comments, I'll listen to Mike. I'll do a conversational podcast.
That'd be cool. Like, I think people have stories to tell. And sometimes I want to go online and consume content that is not somebody telling me how to get rich.
Or
even how to fix, you know, how to get your PPC right. As much as important as it is, and just kind of telling stories. I mean, I think that's why podcasts like Bill Burr's got a podcast now, and it's just him talking to people.
Yeah. It's good. What podcasts do you listen to that are outside of the Amazon space?
Oh, man. So I like Bill Burr's. Mm-hmm. I tried listening to, what's the one with the guys from Arrested Development?
Smartless.
Mm-hmm. I tried getting into Smartless. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't click for me.
Yeah.
But it's like number three, right?
Yeah. It's up there.
Yeah. What about you? What do you rock out?
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that one is
classic.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Is there anybody that's like, if I could go back and restart my life, I think Conan just, like, I love my life, but I just feel like he has this awesome life. Like, you know, his whole life, all he's done is be a comedian, and he seems to really enjoy it. That's what I think is really cool about him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what I mean, is that I feel like he gets so much joy from what he does.
He's living in his gift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to emulate that.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, I don't want to be him, but I want to have that suck as much joy out of what I do that he does.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
Well, let's end it there.
Yeah. I love what I do, but like he really, you can just tell he's having a blast all the time.
That's amazing to find the thing that you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Like that's somebody that found his path.
Right on.
Yeah.
It's cool. Thanks for coming to Austin.
Thanks for having me. Michael's super gracious. I literally invited myself on. I was like, hey, Michael, I'm coming to Austin. He's like, cool. And I was like, BT Dubs, let me be on your podcast.
I thought you were inviting me to your podcast, to be honest. I guess he's got a content thing or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know either. I was like, that's cool.
Yeah. You know, you're like, oh, okay, yeah. Cool.
Mm. Well, this was great.
Yeah. We'll share this on all the channels and
make sure
people that want to learn about PPC and
yeah.
Oh, so Ad Badger. Let me try to do you. So Ad Badger, if you are out there and you are running PPC, you need a software component to help you. You don't have the time or the capacity to change bids all day, every day, and make sure all your keywords are nullified, et cetera. You need a software.
Yeah.
Ad Badger, what I love about Ad Badger is they don't charge a percentage of ad revenue, which drives me nuts because then they're just taking more money as I scale up and giving me the same service. Whereas Ad Badger's flat fee pricing.
Mm-hmm.
So huge fan. Definitely sign up. Check it out.
Thank you.
Michael, do you a demo.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Wanted really agency-friendly pricing too.
Yeah.
Like if you add another client, costs you zero.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In your bucket.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I am filling up our bucket over here.
Right on, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you. We love having you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool.